Welcome to the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined by Matt Oper. How's it going tonight, Matt?
It is going pretty well. I can't really complain.
Yeah. Chris Baines not here this week because he went to hell. So we should jump in and talk about the BYU game. Cincinnati loses 20-3. Game not really that close the second half. UC's defense kept him in the first half, but the story of the season, the offense is terrible, and the defense just doesn't have enough talent through the roster to take the beatings that they're taking in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that's the key. The defense is, it is improved as much or more than we all thought they would, because, you know, based on all the youth they played last year, they should be better this year, and they are drastically better. But they're still not good enough where they can win without any help from the offensive side of the ball, and they're getting zero help from the offense this year. It's just been a train wreck of cosmic proportions on that side of the ball for UC this year, especially considering where they were last year. And I know all the receivers are gone, but they should still be better than this.
Yeah, it's not like all the other players left. They still had a large part of their offense coming back. And for them to just be so bad on almost every aspect of offense is just like head-scratching to watch. It's like, BYU is good, but they're not Alabama. And like, that was like what UC's offense would do against Alabama, except it was a BYU.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the key. It's just like, you need a base level of performance from your offense to kind of win in this era of college football. And UC is far below it. And the defense is not good enough. They don't play a style conducive to just winning games with defense and special teams. And by the way, the special teams suck. So, I mean, it's just a comedy of errors this year.
Yeah, we do. Like, the defense is pretty. It's been like a pretty big, like, bright spot. Although, just watching the games, it's like, damn, the defense can't make a stop when it matters in the second half, which is really like not their fault because, well, okay, it is their fault, but it's not all their fault because they've been keep getting put into disadvantageous positions, and they're just not good enough to have like BYU just run the ball down their throat. And like them not getting off the field on third down, like just by Taysom Hill doing what Greg Ward did to UC, like that was killer. And like, it was just a tough one for the defense overall.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's just, they play hard, they're really talented. They're going to be exceptionally good the next couple of years because they're not losing hardly anybody. Eric Wilson's going to be a big loss. Zach Edwards is going to be a big loss. But the future for the defense is, on the whole, turning upwards. But they're still too young to do what is asked of them with the team the way it is, with zero special teams production and zero offensive production. You know, you can, if you have a defense that's, you know, in the top 20, top 15, you can win on that one down alone. You're not going to win big. Every game's going to be a nail-biter, but you can rack up 10 wins in a season, especially playing in a conference like this. But, you know, UC's, I just looked at their S&P ranking in defense. They're 52nd, which is up like 50 spots from last year. Marked improvement, but you're not able to win games with just that defense, you know, this time of year with this kind of offense. It's just been such a disappointment.
Yeah, this time of year, I think, is like a good part to add on, because like maybe if this was the beginning of the year, you think the defense could like shape up on some of the things that they're just getting exploited on. But there's only 3 games left in the regular season. They are who they are, and the injuries and the slog of the season is really taking effect because, man, it's like Connecticut, South Florida, Temple, BYU, even East Carolina to a large extent. Like, these teams, like, really impose their will on the defense. Like, in no large part because the offense has left them on the field for so long this season. That really takes its toll. Like, they're not as fresh as they were back to start the year. And it seems to really be showing.
Yeah, I mean, they've definitely flagged as the year has gone on. And that's to be expected because they're carrying such a huge workload for this team. They have to do everything. And then the other thing is, early in the year, the turnovers were flowing like it was a bountiful river. That's dried up, as you would expect it to, because their rate of fumble recoveries and interceptions to contested throws was kind of exceptional. Like, you wouldn't expect those numbers to hold for the whole year, and they haven't. So the turnovers have kind of gone away, and they can't really coast on that like they were in the beginning of the year. That's obviously had an effect on the offense as well, because they're not in position to take advantage of great field position from turnovers. And because the special teams have been such an abysmal disaster from start to finish, they're not going to get any advantage in special teams from the kicker punt return game.
And to, like, the kick return front, like, Mike Boone goes down, and he seems like to be the lone bright spot on the kick return unit. Though Khalil Lewis had a nice return, too, but, like, losing Boone, and, like, apparently it's not a good injury, says Tommy Tuberville, so can't really expect Boone to play a big role, especially this week against Central Florida, but probably not for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and that's a huge loss for the team because he was, I mean, he's played better over the last couple of weeks than he did earlier in the year. You know, he's still not, nobody's playing well on offense. Let's be frank about it. But he has seemed to have a slight uptick in terms of how he's producing.
Well, and the backup behind Tion Green is Chad Bonchbach. And no offense to Chad, but he is a... not your backup running back on a team that's going to have a great offense.
No. And I really wonder what happened to the young running backs in Holloman and the guy from Virginia, I'm blanking. I thought both of those guys would have more of an impact this year, and they haven't really seen the field at all.
It's just kind of interesting to think about. Like, why... It's just why, like, they're not trying to do anything to spice up the offense at all. It seems like the worst part is, like, people know what's coming with the offense. And when you get down 14 points, your offense becomes very predictable, no matter who you are. But when you're a limited offense, you just get drilled. And that seems like the second half is when Gunnar Keel ended up getting sacked both his times. And the offense just really... couldn't sustain anything. It was better than the Temple game, but better than the Temple game is such a low bar.
Yeah, I mean, it's just been a nightmare. Start to finish, full stop. It's just been so depressing.
And then the cap on the game where Tommy Tuberville decides to have the offense take a knee with like 45 seconds left and two timeouts when they don't even bother to stop the clock on BYU's final drive, just completely giving up down 14, which, like, say what you want, but I think you have to at least burn your timeouts, I think.
Well, you have to coach through the end of the game, and as much as it bothers me, especially when a game's clearly decided and your chances of winning are nil as a winning team. Like it always frustrates me when teams do that, when you see blowing them out early in, you know, in November, December basketball, because they don't play anybody and they blow everybody out and they just coast to the end. And I get it, but it's annoying. But now on the other side of it, when it doesn't happen, yeah, I kind of want it to happen.
It's just, like, so annoying. I think it's more than annoying, but annoying is the only word I can think of. When there's, like, 4 minutes left in the game, BYU's just killing the clock because they have no other incentive to do anything else. And, like, they just let BYU take it down to 1 second every time. Like, even Corey Chavis is saying, like, on the television broadcast, like, oh, I wonder if they're going to call timeout. Like, oh, no, BYU called timeout to set up their field goal. Like, yeah, it's just dispiriting to just, like, know they're giving it up. Because it's already beyond frustrating that they don't even try at the end of the first half. Like, they haven't ever since Tuberville's been here. And I really don't understand why.
Yeah, I mean, like, this feels different, though. This feels like the capitulation of an enemy after a long fight. Like, Tuberville and his staff knows that they have no future here. They're going to get fired in December. And if they don't get fired in December, like the new arena that we just supposedly raised the money to start, construction on, I wouldn't be surprised if those funding sources disappear if this doesn't happen. Like, they have no choice at this point. And they need people to renew the suites because we're going into year three of Nippert. And if they don't renew them after next year, they're under no obligation to come back. And if those people aren't in those seats, funding your athletic department becomes next to impossible in the conference that you're in because you get nothing at all from the television contracts. You get nothing at all from the conference unless you are the team that makes the Final Four run and goes to the championship game, which might happen, but that's a long shot.
Yeah, it's not something you can bank on. Something you just you hope for. It's like you can't make that your future unless like you're Duke.
No, but even then you can't assume that as part of your fundraising arms, like, oh yeah, we're gonna get that Final Four check. Nobody gets a Final Four check every year since UCLA stopped making runs every year, and that was 40 years ago.
We should talk about the big elephant in the room with UC. It's referenced up top. Like, Tommy Tuberville tells a fan who screaming at him that he stole money from the university. Tuberville told him to go to hell and get a job. And, which UC came back with a weird response when they said Tuberville was in a no-win situation. Which, why would they, I don't understand why they came out and made a statement at all. But especially that one. Where he just didn't have to say anything, and it would have been an okay situation.
Yeah, it would have blown over. Relative, like, this isn't something that's going to linger forever because Tuberville's not going to be here for much longer. And because of that, you're really under no obligation as an institution to make a comment on it. But they still felt the need or the inclination to make a comment. For reasons I can't quite fathom, they thought that this would do... I don't know.
Yeah, it's like
make people less mad?
It's like they thought that, I guess, by not committing to, like, to threat... I don't know. Like, if they came out and strongly said something against Tuberville, I guess that would just add fuel to the fire that they're going to fire him. But they didn't want to support him yelling at a fan. And I guess judging where he was sitting, probably a donor.
Yeah, that's a season ticket holder spot. Like, you don't sit there unless you or someone in your party is a season ticket holder. Like, to get in those end zone seats, that's what it takes. Those are generally not a general sale thing unless it's a really slow game and they cannot get it, you know, have trouble selling tickets. But generally, those seats are taken and spoken for.
But judging from Tuberville's comments today, those people, I guess, at least the people he was yelling at, have been there for years. So like, they've given a lot of money to the university themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I get it from both sides. I really do. Theoretically, I get why Tuberville would yell what he did and why the fan would yell what they did. In theory, I would never do either. I'm far more likely to give that person a death stare be mad about it and furiously text some friends to vent anger half an hour later than I am to actually respond with a shouting match in public in front of many, many cameras.
I think the worst part was yelling, get a job. That doesn't help your case at all. Yeah, if he just, like, told the fan, like, fuck you. I think that would have gone over so much better than saying, go to hell, get a job. At least, like, people would understand the frustration more than they would, like, just singling out the one fan. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just my opinion.
I mean, personally, I'm always a big fan of, oh, for fuck's sake, is a response to anything ridiculous. I would have had a lot more respect for him if he did that. If he just, like, quietly muttered that to himself, loud enough so that it got caught by the cameras, but not loud enough so that it caused the controversy that it did.
In the grand scheme of things, like, this wouldn't be a big deal if UC wasn't fading so hard. Which, of course, this just adds to the growing discontent with the football program, where Tuberville is yelling at his own fans. Regardless of what the fan was yelling at them, that part really doesn't matter. He's not the first coach to get heckled.
No, you make $2 million a year. That is part of the job. It just is. And the biggest part of your job is managing fan interaction. Like, because most fans don't have any contact with you day to day by design, both yours and theirs. There's just no way for, you know, these two groups of people to interact. So what you have to do is, as a coach, is you have to manage how you're presented to the fans. And Tuberville has historically been great at that. You don't... Like, is that like Tuberville's tone deaf on this shit? Like, he survived at Auburn for 8 years. That's not easy. That is one of the most irrational and hostile work environments that you can imagine. And he navigated that swamp for 8 years successfully. That is not a man who lacks political skill. You know, it's just that he's clearly frustrated. He clearly sees the end coming, and he lashed out. Like, that's all it is to me. I don't read any more into it than that. Like I said, I get why he did it. I just would never do that myself.
Actually, in that case, he doesn't have a history of doing any of this type of stuff either. I don't think he's really been, besides Auburn, when, like, things fell apart at the end. He hasn't had a season really fall apart like this in a long time. Even like Texas Tech, at least they knew that they had some ups in their downs. It seems like the bottom has just fallen out of this season. And there's a pretty good chance they could lose, what, like, 7 of their last 8 games, which is just kind of crazy.
Yeah, and if you actually go back to the Auburn years, that ended the exact same way that this did. He had a pretty consistent coaching staff, especially on the offensive side of the ball, for years. But as the years progressed, the offense became more and more predictable and less dynamic. So in his final year, he makes a big shakeup to the offensive coaching staff. In 2008, it was bringing in the immortal Tony Franklin. Tony Franklin lasted like 3 games before he got fired, and Tuberville followed him out the door, you know, a couple months later. It's looking very much like Zach Taylor is the new Tony Franklin, and, you know, he is the, you know, the introduction to the fall, because the fall's coming. Like, there, at this point, there is nothing they can do to save his job. It's just over.
It's like the best case scenario is Zach Taylor's just going to get scapegoated. But really, like, how many times can you just change coordinators when things start going poorly?
Well, that's the thing. Like, Tuberville fashions himself as a CEO coach at this point in his career, which is fine. But to be a true to be a good CEO, to be a good leader, you have to hire good people and let them do the job. He's let coaches do their jobs. He just kind of skipped the first part of that. And when you skip the hire good people part, your results are going to be mixed.
Yeah, I think the biggest area where that shows up has to be recruiting. Because you can't imagine that he goes out there and recruits like he used to. Even like he used to at Texas Tech. He even mentioned recruiting in his press conference today and about how they had to step up their recruiting. Like, and it's kind of weird for a coach to say that in season.
Yeah, well, that's... this is a man trying to buy time. And there's no time for sale. So what else is he going to... say, oh, yeah, we're going to recruit better. And he recruited much better on the offensive and defensive lines than Butch Jones did. I mean, the Bears are still kind of dealing with the fallout from Butch Jones recruiting 6 offensive linemen in 3 cycles. You know, 6 offensive linemen is a good amount for a single class, but he did that in 3 years, which has kind of put them behind the 8-ball in the offensive line for the entire Tuberville era. But, like, that excuse, the clock on that one ends this year, because this is the last of Butch's guys. The rest of these are Tubbs dudes. He's drastically improved the defensive line talent. Like, it's night and day what it was. There are a couple guys on this defensive line who in 2 or 3 years' time are probably going to end up getting drafted because they're that talented.
We should mention Broughton. He looks really good again. Like, he's been a great find.
He's been a beast. An absolute monster. But, you know, and you could see it last year when he was a freshman. Like, he would have flashes where he just, like, wow, like, who the fuck is that and where did he come from? And now he's having more and more of those. And I've been really impressed with Kevin Muhan as well. I know he's recruited as a linebacker, but he's found a home at defensive end, and he's been an effective player for UC in a way that I didn't think he would be this year.
It seems like the biggest problem has just been the offensive skill positions. So we haven't seen anything from a Tuberville running back. I guess Boone would be a Tuberville recruit, I guess. But, we haven't seen much of a quarterback, none of really the receivers. I guess Devin Grace had a solid season, but, you had just a couple of players out of, 3 or 4 classes. It's not really showing a whole lot on that side. Especially since next season, there's going to be a giant question mark at quarterback.
Yeah. But that's, this goes back to the point I made the last time we talked, is, if you're gonna... I might have actually made this point to you. I might have just said this on Twitter. So if you are playing for the... the only reason Gunnar Keel is playing now is that Tubbs fears for his job and he wants, the most reliable person he has. That doesn't mean that Gunnar's the best. He started so well here at UC that people still kind of think that he's that guy, but he's not that guy. His last 6 games last year were dreadful, and he's not much better this year. Part of that is the offense, but part of it is he just has serious limitations as a quarterback, especially when it comes to things like basic footwear in the pocket and decision-making. Those are not areas where he has excelled at any point while at UC. And now that they're not running an offense that is so reliant on the deep ball, where he can just take these one-on-one shots to guys like Chris Moore, Mikhail McKay, even Nate Cole and Max Morrison, those plays aren't there. And you have to execute, you have to execute in the passing game, going piecemeal down the field in 6, 7, 8 yard chunks. And that's not something he's capable of. And we're seeing more and more evidence of that. And we have pretty conclusive evidence that Hayden Moore is not going to ever be capable of that, which is why... you guys laughed at me when I said that I would like to see what Ross Trail could do, and I wouldn't be shocked if he was a starting quarterback. This is why, because you have to see what you have in Ross Trail. He played one start, in a game where they had a terrible game plan, were immediately down, and there was way too much pressure on him. They never really built a system around him that gave him a chance to, you know, survive, let alone thrive. I would have liked to have seen that at some point. I still think he is the future at the position until he proves that he's not. We know at this point that Hayden Moore is not. So I just kind of want to see what Ross Drill can do.
On that front, do you think that they would make a change at all for any of the, like, the last two games, since Keel is definitely going to start this week?
No.
I don't either, although I wouldn't be opposed if they did start Trail against Tulsa. But that's not really the type of team you would want to throw them out against.
No, but let's be real. None of these teams are.
I would say
they can't execute the most basic concepts of offense. It's just such a disaster.
I would take my chances against Memphis's defense.
It worked for Hayden Moore.
Speaking of Nate Cole, like we mentioned this last time, after East Carolina, 3 catches, 28 yards, 532 against Temple, 115 BYU. So he and Gunnar Keogh don't really seem to have any type of like rapport.
No, but it's also a case where the two best receivers on this team are clearly Devin Gray and Khalil Lewis. And they also bring the one thing that this offense needs that they haven't had, which is a vertical threat.
It is kind of weird how it's only one of Gray or Lewis will catch any passes downfield per game. It's like if one of them can run the deep pass, then the other one doesn't do anything.
Because
last game it was Gray had a monster game, and Lewis had one catch. I don't know. Their offensive game plan has just been weird all season. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like the offensive game plan is built on superior talent and execution, but guess what? You don't really have superior talent.
Yeah. Which is...
you can't run these simple-ass... You can't just have this simple base offense and expect it to work without any adjustment. And they don't seem to have any adjustments whatsoever in terms of changing formations, personnel, you know, groupings, going, you know, varying tempo, any of that. They just, you know, they do the same things over and over again and expect a different result, which, as Einstein taught us, is the definition of insanity.
I think the thing that stands out the most is anytime they fall behind, which has been a lot lately, like, their offense just seems to be so predictable. Like, they'll first down run, second down pass. The defense is on it. Like, no problem. And it's, like, been bad defenses, like East Carolina, or been good defenses, like Temple. Like, you're just not fooling the defense, period. And it's just been the most... It's like, there's a lot to criticize with the offense this year.
Look, I mean, it really comes down to one thing. There are 20 teams that are worse on first downs or standard downs on offense than UC. That's it. Literally the entire country is better. And it's been this way for 2 years now.
And then we're seeing, on top of that, like all the big plays are gone. Which is just like all adds up. If you take the big play, now we see if like you took all the big plays out of the Eddie Grant offense, what would happen? And the results are terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it, like, and UC gets an average amount of big plays in a game, but they were getting more big plays than almost anybody the last couple of years. So going from that to being just average in terms of generating those big chunk plays. That's a huge difference. And it's why this offense is as bad as it is.
where they're not getting the big plays is through the run game, which we've beat that horse to death by now. But Tyon Green had a 27-yard run, and that was his longest run of the season. And according to the ESPN stats, the longest run by a running back this season.
Yep. But the biggest one was Kyle Lewis, who went for, 70-something against Purdue? That was the longest run of the year.
And your running backs have run for 4 touchdowns through all these games. The Ross Trail is tied for the team lead in rush touchdowns.
That is all you need to know.
Short version of the podcast this week is pressed for time. Let's preview Central Florida. It's something that if I told you last year that Central Florida would open up a 10-point favorite against Cincinnati, and that spread would go up 2.5 points, like how flummoxed would you be? Who would you think that Central Florida hired to be their head coach?
Chip Kelly. Like there's no good answer for that, because what he's done with this Central Florida team is remarkable in an insanely short period of time. And this is a team that is starved for depth at basically every position. Like, they are razor thin along the lines, especially. And they're sitting here at what, 4-3, probably going to make a bowl game. Would not have guessed that.
Yeah, they're 5-4 on the season, and this one would put them out in bowl eligibility, which is kind of crazy. By S&P, their defense ranks 21st, which, if you remember the game last year, Central Florida's defense was the worst. I remember saying that they were the worst team UC played last year, and they've gotten a lot better. Like Chicago.
And they were the worst team UC played last year by miles.
Like, that game was never close. That was the biggest laugher of the season, and UC played a FCS team.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, what Scott Frost has done is remarkable. He's not going to win Coach of the Year, because it's probably going to go to Ken Niumatalolu. Rightfully so, but man, what he's done is incredible.
Shaquem Griffin, 12 tackles for loss, 8.5 sacks, 1 pick, 2 forced fumbles. Probably the favorite for defensive player of the year in the league, I would guess. And we've seen linebackers have giant days against UC, so you gotta think he's gonna have a pretty big day.
Yeah, because nobody ever blocks linebackers in this offense.
And their linebackers as a whole are one of the top 5 best groups in the entire nation in causing havoc plays, which is always a good sign when your team can't run the ball or protect the quarterback.
That sounds bad. I'm guessing it's going to go bad.
So if, like, there was any hope in this one, which there doesn't seem to be a ton, that UCF's offense is pretty bad. They still haven't really found a quarterback. They've been starting Mackenzie Milton, and he's got pretty pedestrian numbers. He's been sacked a ton. Like, none of their running backs stand out. None of their receivers really stand out. So, like, if UC can keep it a toss-up game, like, maybe they have a chance, but I just don't see the offense doing anything against the UCF defense. I think this is going to be a tough one.
Oh, it's going to be a brutal game. It's not going to be fun. I'm probably not going to watch this. It's going to be perfectly honest. I might record it. I probably will not watch it.
I don't really blame you.
I mean, that's where, like, for 15 years, I didn't miss a fucking game. I was either there or I watched it. I missed more this year than I have. I missed more this year on purpose than I have in the previous 15. That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, there's There's definitely been games this season that I haven't had the chance to watch live, like Purdue, for example. But I didn't watch that game until like Monday. It's like, yeah, man, I don't really feel like watching this one. Part of that was because I knew the result, but I don't know. Like, just after the season opener, this team hasn't really inspired. And it does feel like some of these games, especially like the last couple of weeks, it's felt like, man, I feel like I have to watch more than I really want to watch. Which is really depressing to say about like the team you care about.
Yeah, I mean, look, for the season opener, I went to Cedar Point that day. And I had a lot of fun, but I knew I had to leave because I had to get home for the game. And now looking back in November, I think to myself, man, I really should have stayed at Cedar Point. I could have rode Millennium Force like four more times. That would have been better. Would have been a better use of my time.
Yeah. Can't really go against that one. But the good news, we'll end the podcast on positive news for once. At least basketball is about to start.
Yeah. Like, I watched the Bellarmine game today, and I swear to God, if I see Kevin Johnson pump fake nobody one more time, I'm going to punch somebody.
You're going to have
to... No more pump fakes. Everybody knows it's coming, Kevin. No one is surprised when you don't shoot. You know why? Because everyone knows you don't want to shoot.
And
I mean, he was a leading scorer, congrats, but god damn it.
This is just the exhibition season, too. Kevin Johnson love is just going to keep continuing, I guess.
I mean, I really have nothing good to say about him. He's an okay defender, but he's still wildly overrated as a defender. He's not nearly as good as Mick or anyone else thinks he is.
But he's not Rashad Bishop.
No, not even close.
That took a terrible turn for the worse. So let's end with the happier news. As UC added a walk-on basketball player whose name is John Cause. So we can call him the Cause.
Oh, that's fun.
Now we have two walk-ons to cheer for.
Yeah.
Which, hopefully they'll get a lot of run in some of these early season games.
I have a feeling they will. Starting Friday.
Do you have anything else you want to get off your chest before we close out this truncated podcast?
Nah, I think that'll do it. He says with a resigned sigh.
Chris may be joining us sometime in the next week or so. We can just tell his news. He and his wife had a baby. Mainly his wife did. So he's...
is he breaking a medical precedent? That's amazing. I did not know my friend was so talented.
That's your breaking news from this edition of the podcast.